We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by AT&T, a proud supporter of Carolina Athletics.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, I have a question for you.
Is it Tuesday?
No, that's not the question.
Is it Wednesday?
Nope.
Thursday?
No. Getting warmer, Adam.
Is it Friday?
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the week.
Rebecca, it was a scant 97 episodes ago that we had Rebecca on the show.
It's hard to believe we had her on the pod. We've had a lot of people on the pod, and I think that's the one that surprises me the most.
Shoot for the stars, Adam.
That's right.
Or wait, shoot for the moon.
Moon. You'll
you
land among the stars.
Land among the stars.
You'll land among the Rebecca Blacks.
Oh, we appreciate you being here with us. And what we thought we would do this evening, and as you're hearing this on Friday, is talk a little bit about the basketball award ceremony, which really is kind of the end, the official end, and obviously the final game is the last time that most people see the Tar Heels, but kind of from the team perspective, the award banquet is the end of the season. And so got to hear from coaches and players, and we'll talk about all that. And then you're going to hear from Luke May. And Adam, what a terrific interview this is with Luke, not because you and I asked some kind of unbelievable questions, but because I just thought it was a very relaxed and kind of introspective discussion with Luke May as he talked about not just this year, but his entire career at Carolina, both on and off the court, and some of the things that were meaningful to him and people who were meaningful to him. And I just, not that I don't enjoy all our interviews, but I really had a good time and thought it was a really quality conversation with Luke.
Well, and you, as you know, if you've been listening to the pod all season, we didn't have Luke on during the season because we had had this thought about midway through, what if we had Luke on after the season as he's in between season and graduation so he could reflect a little.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was good because he did reflect more than a little. And you don't often get to hear from Carolina basketball players in that context because it's always around the season. So it was nice to hear kind of where his head was as he's just a couple weeks away from graduation.
So you'll get to hear that interview coming up in just a little bit. We have a story time after that. I don't know if Adam has anything else or not. We'll see. But Adam, let's start with the basketball banquet. It was Wednesday night in Chapel Hill. And as it always is, just a, I don't know a better word than it's just a neat event because you get to see the real relationship, kind of personal part of Carolina basketball. And you and I are lucky we're around the team a fair amount, and so you get a feel for that, but you really get a really solid understanding of it at this event where the coaches come up and give out some team awards, and a lot of them say something about individual players or the team as a whole, and Coach Williams speaks a couple different times, and then the seniors get up and talk, and it was just a quality event yet again this year of what was a really high-quality and fun team to be around.
I think Carolina basketball is this really big, giant thing that everyone has a little piece of, and it's worldwide, and there's fans all over the place. And I think the thing about the banquet is for those two or more hours, it seems smaller, I think, because everybody's talking directly to the people they're talking to, and you can tell how meaningful it is to the coaches and the players and the families who were there. That's what I like about it, is that for 2.5 hours or so, it's a team just like any other team you've been on. We've all been to those banquets. We've all had a kid who's played on a team and they have an end-of-season banquet, or we've been on the team and they have an end-of-season banquet. It's pretty much just like that, except all these people who are up at the podium are these guys you cheer for in the Smith Center with 22,000 of your friends.
Seem like the recurring theme for this event and really this season was the senior class, was Kenny Williams, Luke May, and Cameron Johnson, and not just the quality players that they were for Carolina, but the type of people that they were and how they represented Carolina off the court. That theme came up again and again from the coaches, even when they would talk about each other. And it just seemed like that was the dominant, the thesis of the night was that.
We had talked before about how it felt like a chapter was closing, and it definitely felt like it after the banquet. It felt like this was the end point, and next season you'll have to turn over a new page. And Coach Williams said that in his 31 years as a coach, this was the easiest team he had ever had to coach, which I thought was saying something because he's had some really fun teams. Said he didn't think he had ever gotten a call about any of them doing something wrong. Cam Johnson told a really funny story about he and Luke May not really getting in trouble, but Luke May felt like they had gotten in trouble for being a couple minutes late to a function. So just a fun group, and definitely spearheaded by those three seniors.
I thought to the fact that a lot of talk about the individual work put in by those three guys, and whether it's Cameron Johnson when he was rehabbing from his off-season surgery, or we've certainly heard the stories before from Luke May, or about Luke May and how he worked so hard to make himself a better player and to be such a large contributor like he became. Or Kenny Williams, same thing with injuries early in his career and sticking out that really tough freshman year where he didn't play very well or play as much as he wanted. And it just seemed like that again was another recurring theme, was the hard work that these individuals put in outside of the framework of all the work that all the guys put in throughout the course of a year, but that extra work that they all put in to elevate their play.
Coach Williams said at the banquet that maybe more than any team I've coached, your success, talking about the team success, was due to your work. I think that goes back to something we've talked about quite a bit, that on paper, this team maybe is not the most dominating team you could think of, but the fact that they all put in that work and made themselves into this formidable team that everyone has pointed out, the best four-year seeding stretch in Carolina basketball history, they made themselves into that. And I thought Coach Williams rightfully pointed that out, and you know how much he appreciates that.
Yep.
That's right up his alley. And so it's no wonder that it seems like he has such a close connection to this team.
Another interesting moment, I thought, was when Coach Williams singled out Coby White. And now, you don't always know, when you have a guy who's leaving early, you don't always know at this point of the year that he is leaving. Either maybe he hasn't declared yet, or he's somebody who's going to test the waters, quote-unquote, or whatever. And so it's one of those things where every situation isn't just like this, where you know that Kobe's going into the draft. But I thought it was interesting that Coach Williams singled him out and talked about not only how much he had given him basketball-wise, but how much he meant to the program and how much he enjoyed his personality. And then maybe most importantly, or maybe not most importantly, but most interestingly to me, is then when he said, everybody here from your teammates on to everybody in the room is going to be following you closely and watching you closely because you'll always be a Tar Heel. I just thought that was interesting that he took the time to make that particular point about Kobe White.
Yeah, we don't usually get that because we're used to the decision comes after the banquet, and that's always the thing that people talk about is, well, we won't have any NBA decisions until after the banquet.
Right.
Well, that's very 2008, and that means it's 2000 and late, Jones.
I sold 3008, you sold 2000 and late.
Because now we get the decisions a couple days after the season's over. So it was – it's funny you said that because when he was addressing Kobe directly from the podium, I was thinking, we've never really had this before. Like when Raymond Felton left, the banquet had already happened. Like
right.
they had to have the banquet so then they could make their decisions because they didn't want those guys to be hounded about their decisions at the banquet. So it's an interesting time we're living in, but it was so clear how much everybody loves Kobe, respects Kobe, no ill will as you wouldn't think there would be. He clearly has made the right choice. But just what a valuable part of the team he was and how much everybody enjoyed playing with him.
Two more things, at least, that stood out to me, and then anything else, obviously, that you have. But as he always does, Roy Williams singling out the guys who are returning. And again, it would be surprising, I think, if there isn't somebody else added to this team as well. The Tar Heels are actively still recruiting, both through quote-unquote regular recruiting and graduate transfers. Plus, you know you have two freshmen already signed in Francis and Bacot. But actively mentioning some guys and about how hard they needed to work and how many steps that they needed to take forward. You know, specifically talk to Leaky Black and Sterling Manley about getting themselves as healthy as possible and being back to 100%. You know, mentioned Seventh Woods and Brandon Robinson. Those guys got mentioned a lot by the seniors and the coaches about their the need for those guys to step up. And it is, again, the Tar Heels in a little bit of flux roster-wise right now. But as it happens every year, Coach Williams making sure he picked out a couple of guys to say, hey, we need you to do this.
I think that's part of why – and he mentioned at the end he wants to have the banquet because he likes having a time to give people awards and he likes the seniors having the opportunity to thank people. But I think, too, and he didn't say this, but I think it, I think he likes the opportunity to challenge.
So it's got to be right.
Yeah, clearly I know I'm in his head. I think he likes having that opportunity to challenge the ones who are returning in front of their current teammates and kind of throw the gauntlet at their feet in front of their peers. Because I think he believes that's powerful to them to have that challenge. And some years, players have said that it is. And we don't know yet if it is this year because it's still too early. But I think that's a powerful thing to be sitting there with your peers and have them lauded for all the work they've done and then have the Hall of Fame head coach say, we need you to work as hard as them. It's hard to sit there and go, I probably don't need to when you have clear evidence that, yes, you do.
I am sure – well, I shouldn't say I'm sure. I would be surprised if there is a banquet where a player goes up and said something not nice about his coaches at that point in time. But I do think – I can't imagine there's anybody or any place where it happens as sincerely as at Carolina. When Cameron Johnson and Kenny Williams and Luke May got up and spoke, and they spoke about Roy Williams or – you know, for Kenny Williams, it was Hubert Davis who was clearly so important to him. You know, Cameron Johnson really thanked Brad Frederick for his hard work in helping get the whole mess of the transfer, help that to come through. And you could feel the sincerity in the voices of those guys when they were speaking to the coaches. And Cameron Johnson even mentioned, he said, you know, there have been times in my career where the players didn't fully trust what was happening with their coaches and it affected things. And that's not the case here with this group. And I just thought that was cool.
Well, you know, you said, I'm sure there's not many banquets where players get up there and don't say those things. I think we kind of take it for granted to a certain extent that we're so used to hearing players say that about the Carolina basketball coaches that we don't think about the fact that exactly what Cam Johnson said, that he's been on teams where the players didn't trust the coaches. And it's entirely possible that that's the majority of teams. We're just not used to that because we've got it so good here. And so that's another thing that's nice about the banquet is that it just reminds you, you see Coach Williams and the staff coaching them on the floor during games, and that's 1% of the time they spend together, and you don't appreciate everything else that they do together and everything else that the coaches do for the players. And I think these players, more than any, and Luke Mayo talked some about this, have an appreciation for what it's going to be like to come back and be in a little bit of a different role than you are now as a player. And so I think all three of those guys, I mean, I certainly expect we will see them frequently, mm-hmm. and they're exactly the type you'd want hanging around a future Carolina team, whether it's the 2020 team or the 2050 team. You'll want those three around.
I can just imagine the tearjerkers Adam's going to write about that 2050 team after a emotional home win.
Ninth Woods with a triple-double.
Some of the awards given at the banquet are statistical things. So, you know, like the Tyler Hansbrough leading score award, and Cameron Johnson got that, and the Billy Cunningham leading rebounder award, and Luke May got that. And then there's a couple that are voted on by the team and the coaches. And Adam, if I'm not mistaken, there's three of them that are that way. So correct me if I'm missing one here. There was most improved, and that went to Garrison Brooks. There was what's called the Marvin Williams, like Carolina Spirit Award.
Carolina Way Award, I think.
Something along that, yeah, along those lines. Just the player that embodies what it means to be a Carolina basketball player and does a bunch of things that help the team. And that went to Kenny Williams. And then the MVP, which went to Cameron Johnson. And so I don't know how you could argue with any one of those three. I think, yeah, certainly all three of those felt correct.
It is the Marvin Williams Carolina Way Award. And just a little bit of color from the banquet that maybe you wouldn't get otherwise. Coach Williams talked about how a few days ago, I guess, he had been talking to Wanda Williams, his wife, and Coach Williams was concerned that Kenny Williams was not going to get an award his senior year. That's the kind of thing Roy Williams worries about. I don't know that Kenny was laying awake at night thinking about it, or maybe he was. And so Coach Williams said he slept on it. Of course, he didn't sleep much, but he slept a little. And slept on it and then got up the next morning and realized, no need to worry. There's the Marvin Williams Carolina Way Award, which perfectly describes Kenny Williams. And he felt confident Kenny would win that one, and of course he did, which when you hear Jones describe what the award was, you know immediately that that's the perfect award for Kenny Williams, so it makes sense.
Anything, Adam, that I have not referenced that stood out to you or that you took note of?
Coach Robinson did an impressive Steve Kirshner impression.
That was pretty good.
You never know what you're going to get at the banquet, and this year you got that, and that was worth the price of admission. I thought something Hubert Davis said. Hubert Davis, always an excellent speaker at these.
He's so good at those.
And he said,
anytime, he's so good.
He talked about each senior, and he was talking about Luke May, and he said, I desperately do not want Luke to go. I thought that sounds like a meaningful thing to say, not just, oh, I'm going to be sorry to see you go, but I desperately do not want Luke to go, and talked about how much he had enjoyed getting to be part of Luke's life and Luke be part of his family's life. As we know, Coach Davis's family is very important to him. I thought the Cam Johnson and Luke May getting in trouble for being 2 minutes late story was really good. Cam Johnson kind of started out his remarks with, yeah, this is how I know Luke May has never been in trouble in his life. And it was from the ACC tournament, and they were running seconds late for a function. And Cam said, as they were getting off the elevator to walk in, I guess, Cam said, Luke, we're going to be okay. It's all right. And he said, Luke looked at him and goes, Cam, I think this is it for us. So he was really worried about it, that somehow Cam Johnson and Luke May would be kicked off the team during the ACC tournament.
You are 90 seconds late to breakfast, sir.
Yeah, you've had it, son. But luckily, they both survived. All three seniors spoke without a single note. That always is very impressive to me when anyone does it, but much less a senior in college to give that type of talk with not a single note written down. And then I really liked that both Luke May and Kenny Williams said they vividly remembered when Coach Williams first called them. And I thought that was impressive, and it shows what a big moment in their life it was. Kenny Williams said it was a dream come true, and then Luke, who had two of his brothers there, said, when Coach Williams called me, I was kind of looking at my brothers, and I was mouthing, "It's Coach Williams," which I thought that was cool, because sometimes you forget that it's a big deal even to them, just like it would be to any of us if Coach Williams called us. And the fact that they remembered it so vividly, I think, shows how important being part of Carolina basketball is to them.
Two things I thought about just when you were talking, and then we'll get to that Luke May interview. I think both Cameron Johnson and Kenny Williams referenced when talking about Coach Williams something along the lines of, everything you said to me, you stayed true to. And, of course, they were a little unique situations. Kenny had originally committed to VCU, changed his commitment after a coaching change. We know Cameron Johnson started at Pittsburgh before coming to Carolina. But I thought that was interesting that they both pointed that out. They said that everything you said, you stayed true to. And that's something that Roy Williams, I think, prides himself on, is that he's going to tell you the truth to the best of his ability. And I think that was particularly important here over the last couple of years with all the stuff that Carolina went through off the court. That's something that they both referenced in their comments.
And I thought Kenny Williams illustrated it really well, because he talked about during his freshman season, when he, of course, was struggling so much shooting the ball, and he had a meeting with Coach Williams, and Coach Williams told him, when that first one goes in for you, I'm going to be happier than anybody there. And Kenny said that he's gone back and watched the video of that ACC tournament game against Pitt. He said he had watched it several times recently. And he said he always took note of Coach Williams's reaction on the bench as the ball is in the air, as Jones says, during the ball flight.
Yeah.
And he said you can see Coach Williams using body language trying to get the ball in the net. And then when it goes through, it is indeed Coach Williams who immediately has one of the biggest reactions. So I thought sometimes those little things that you don't think about because it's not you are so important to someone like Kenny Williams, who is, in fact, actually a real person, not just a basketball player. And that he would notice something that little, and that it would be that meaningful to him. Sometimes it's those little things that build these big, important relationships.
Okay, now really last thing for me. Everybody, well, if you follow Carolina basketball, you know the players. You know Roy Williams. You probably know all the assistant coaches. There are so many other people around Carolina basketball that make it go, and I thought it is always nice for the player just to see that interaction between the players and Doug Howerson, Carolina's trainer, who, you know, Kenny Williams has been in the training room a bunch. He's been hurt a lot early in his career. Or Jonas Serration in the weight room, or Eric Hoots, or Sean May, or Kendall Marshall, or whoever it might be. They're just other people other than the ones I think that you think about all the time that really make Carolina basketball what it is.
And make it meaningful for the players. I think if it was just the players and the coaches, it wouldn't be the same, because it's the whole experience that they're having. And that's been true all the way back to Kay Thomas.
Yeah.
And the players writing things in the media guide about Miss Lee's carrot cake. it's been true for forever. And Linda Woods. And so I think it's nice that has continued, even if those folks, as you said, are not as visible. It's still clearly important to the players, and that's what really matters.
One of those players, and one of those players who spoke on Wednesday night, is Luke May. Adam and I had a chance to catch up with Luke a little earlier in the week, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. Let's get to that conversation. We'll come back out of it, talk a little bit about Luke, maybe get some final thoughts on this season from Carolina basketball, if we have any more, and we'll keep rocking and rolling as well. But first, let's let you listen in on Luke May.
Jones, it's national champion time, and we've got another national champion on the pod, a repeat guest.
That's right, second time.
Yeah,
second time.
Luke May, very nice to give us some time after the season is over, when he is headed towards graduation and has a ton of things going on. You might have seen him out barnstorming There's no telling where you've seen him because he's all over the place. Luke, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
What has life been like these last 3-4 weeks for you?
Yeah, season ended a little early, so it's bittersweet, but I feel like coming down to the end, it's been good. I took a week and a half off and was able to reflect some of my time here and focus on kind of what's ahead for me and trying to continue to play basketball at a high level, something that I want to do. And I was able to take a couple of days and go visit Justin in Dallas and got to see Dirk Nowitzki's last home game.
That's
which
cool.
is my favorite player, somebody I idolized growing up. And it was really cool to meet him. And then now I just got started working out on Friday and kind of just been working out with Sean and Kendall on the court and Jonas in the weight room and trying to get back in shape, getting ready for May and some of the workouts I'm going to try to do. And just kind of taking it all in this last month. Like you said, it's coming down to the end, and it's been great to reflect on some of the time and the memories I've had, but definitely kind of tough to just think that I won't be wearing that jersey ever again.
What kind of thoughts or memories when you were doing that reflection? Like, what kind of things ran through your head when you were sitting there thinking about your time?
Yeah, so I did a little segment with Josh and Dana about just some of the memories I had and reflecting back on those. And I mean, the memories I remember, obviously, beating Duke at home last year, and then my freshman year even beating Duke at Cameron was my first win in Cameron, which was pretty special. And then winning the Maui Invitational when I was hurt, it was pretty big for my development just because it showed me just how much I missed the game of basketball, and then it also showed me how good we could be that year. And I was very thankful to be with such a great group of guys. I was reflecting on Marcus Page, Bryce Johnson, two of the better leaders that I've been around, and then Justin and Kennedy, just having such great relationships with those guys, and then coming into Joel, Theo, and myself, Kenny, and Cam. I mean, it's just been a great group of guys that I've been around, and that just mentions a few. I mean, there were so many others that really affected my time here on the court and then off the court. I mean, I can't even get to the amount of people that have touched me here and through my trips to the hospital, and also through my time just walking on campus and being able to reach out. And so many people have talked to me about Adam's write-up about me going to the hospital, and I've just really appreciated how you wrote that and just the things that you mentioned in there, which is pretty special to me.
I appreciate that. Why was it important to you to do that kind of thing? Because mm-hmm. that was something nobody really knew you were doing until the last month or two.
Yeah, and I won't give him all the credit, but I think Eric had a huge influence in that, and he kind of brought me over there my freshman year one time, and I really enjoyed it. And I texted him, I think it was about a month or two later, and asked if we could go back. And he's just been great and kind of mentoring me, not only as a player, but as a person, and just showing me how to live the right way and be somebody that can really impact the community, not only through basketball. And I mean, I've enjoyed that, and I've kind of taken it upon myself to go over there by myself some, and I take some of my teammates. I've taken Will Blumberg, who's a tennis player, and I took my girlfriend last week. And I mean, just it's a great time to just be able to reflect and just brighten people's day, and that's really important to me.
I know a couple times you went over there even on game days. What kind of balance does that provide for you to see that part of the world in the afternoon and then a totally different part of the world in the evening?
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest thing for me is, I mean, I'm big into routine, but I think there's always time for others. And I think the biggest thing is just remembering that, I mean, so many people go through so much every day, and we're just very blessed to be able to live a healthy and most of the time kind of easy life. And I feel like I've done the best I could to make others feel like that they matter, and I feel like that's just something that I've really tried to do as much as I can with my time here. And I mean, I've just haven't been able to get over there as much as I would like because based on the balance of school and basketball, but I've enjoyed it, and it's been a great time just being able to meet so many people.
Luke, when you were talking about some of your memories and what you reflected on, you didn't mention the shot against Kentucky. I think that's what people probably know you the best for. How has your life changed from that moment until now, or how did that moment maybe change your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't mention that shot too much just because I feel like most people remember that shot, and a lot of people don't remember the smaller details that made me who I am today and the person I am. But, I mean, it just – it really gave me a platform and put me on the big stage and allowed me to kind of show what I could really do, and it put people on notice after I made that shot. And I remember that summer I told Coach that I didn't want to be remembered just for that shot, and – I kind of tried to prove myself the next year and played pretty well. And I mean, it didn't end the way we wanted, but and then this coming year, I thought our team overall had a lot better year. We got a one seed, and I made some strides in different areas of my game, but I thought it was just something that really propelled my career, and it gave me an opportunity to showcase what I could do in the ACC and at a national level as well.
We had the opportunity to sit down with the three living starters from the 1957 team a few weeks ago.
Yes, sir.
And they were talking about Joe Quigg's free throws that won that championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, I mean, you talk about the biggest shots in Carolina history, you talk about Joe's free throws and Michael Jordan's shot in 82 and Luke May's shot against Kentucky in 17. Are we far enough away from it yet that you can appreciate kind of where it sits for Carolina basketball?
I mean, I think once a couple years out of the program, it'll mean a lot more, but it truly does. I mean, people ask me all the time, how often do people bring that up? And I mean, it doesn't a week go by where somebody doesn't talk to me about it. And I mean, I think that just talks about the testament of how big basketball is, and especially in this town and around this area. It's just huge, and it makes so many people get excited about Carolina basketball just because, I mean, the players like myself and like Justin Jackson and guys who've really paved the way for the future, and I'm just very blessed to be mentioned in that group.
Luke, did it get overwhelming at any point for you? I mean, Carolina basketball, big shots, how big it is in this state, you being a North Carolina guy, did any of that ever get overwhelming for you at any point?
I'd say maybe a little bit at the beginning of my junior year. It was definitely something that I tried to battle and kind of talk through with my parents, and with I talked with Justin some while he was in the NBA, just trying to focus on the small details and not really getting caught up in how many points you score and the big aspect of it. And I mean, it was definitely something that I had to learn how to cope with, and how teams were playing me differently, and how people were starting to notice me a lot more on the streets and just when we traveled and things like that. And I tried to focus more on just being who I am and playing the game I love. And I mean, also going to the hospital through that time also helped me kind of stay in my own shoes and humble me as well. And I thought that was big for kind of my growth throughout that year and then into this year. And I've just been very thankful every moment that I've had so many people, who I mentioned earlier, touch me throughout my process.
We talked, Jones and I talked earlier this year about how we weren't sure people appreciated how difficult it was to be a senior Carolina basketball player when you're also a college senior.
Mm-hmm.
And being a college senior is tough because you don't know what's next. What do people maybe not know about? I think they think, oh, being a Carolina senior is great. You're the leader of the team, and you get to do whatever you want. Coach Williams likes you now, and you know you're not a freshman anymore. You know what's going on. What do they not know or appreciate about sort of the full picture of being a Carolina basketball senior?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would talk about is the balance of time that you've mentioned. Myself being lucky enough to be accepted into the business school, I mean, I will say this semester has been a lot easy for me because I've been able to work through summers and try to get ahead, and I've been able to have lighter load in this spring. But the fall was tough. I mean, 12 hours, 9 hours in the business school, I mean, it was a lot of work. And being a senior and being somebody who's accepted the leadership role and trying to lead a young group of guys, it was definitely a lot to handle. And I've been very grateful to have two other seniors who were able to kind of bounce ideas off of, and Cam and Kenny did a great job of trying to help us all through get to where we got to. And I thought, I mean, nobody would have done a better job. And then also with Coach, I mean, he does like when you stay around because he gets to know you a little bit better. But I mean, he treats everybody the same. He gives everybody the same opportunities. If you play well, he plays you. And I think that's what I respect the most about him. I mean, I had to earn my time. But, I mean, guys like Kobe and Nas, they came in and they gave us great minutes. And he gave them opportunities that he wouldn't give other people because he saw their talent and he saw their ability. And I think that's something that Coach really instilled in me. And he got on me so much. And I felt like that just showed that he wanted to really make me the best I could be with my last year. And I just can't thank Coach enough for the man and the player I've become because of him.
You mentioned Cam and Kenny. I think it's relatively well known that you guys have been good friends and friends for a while now, particularly you and Kenny, of course, coming in at the same time. But describe that relationship to us, you with those two guys, and kind of how it's evolved here through the last couple of years.
Yeah, Cam and Kenny, man, have meant so much to me, especially the way that we've been able to room together for the past 2 years and just grow in outside of basketball and just have late night talks. I remember staying up late with Cam last year and just talking till 1 in the morning just about life, about his family, about kind of what he's thinking with our team, what he's thinking for after basketball, things like that, which have really grown our relationship and being able to talk through some tough times and work through adversity. And then, I mean, Kenny, we've been through so much together, and for him to have gone through all the injuries he has and all the life changes he has and the family things that's gone on in his life, I mean, he's been somebody that's really taken a humongous step forward. And he's somebody who's grown so much throughout his 4 years here that, I mean, I'm just so proud of him and the person he's become, and just a great friend and almost like an older brother to me. I've always had three younger brothers, but somebody who I can look up to and be able to kind of share great moments with. I mean, he's just definitely a brother for life for me.
During the NCAA tournament, a lot of the teams wore the warm-up shirts that said family on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems pretty evident that everybody wants to adopt that in some way because they realize it's this good thing and they want to grab part of it. What is it about Carolina that's different in that regard that you don't necessarily have to put it on a shirt? It just is.
Yeah. I was talking to Hoots a little bit about it on our drive through the barnstorming, many barnstorming drives we have. But I think the biggest thing about family is, like, you can have guys on your team who kind of bought in, and guys who are friends and family, and you can all say you're brothers. I mean, that's great. But I think the true testament to family is when you have guys like Eric Montross, mentor myself, and then guys who stick around the program like David Noel, who's coaching high school, Rasheed Wallace, who's coaching high school, who come around, come to home games, and really instill that kind of confidence that you need from older guys who have done it and who have played well. And I mean, Jawal Williams reached out to me multiple times this year, and Tyler came to all our games throughout the tournament. And I think that just really preaches to kind of what Hoots continues to talk about. Like, it's tough to bring guys back and to have them bought into the family culture that kind of has instilled this university and this Carolina basketball program. And I mean, just the reunion we had with so many players back, it just shows that not only the current team is a family, but just the broader, how everybody, coach has really broadened everybody's mind with, it's not all about kind of getting to your own aspirations. It's about kind of where you've been and where you've come from and laying the groundwork. And I mean, I think that just really shows a testament to Coach Williams and the guys who've been before me and hopefully come after me. So, I mean, that's something that I truly think family means.
Luke, you're speaking of family. Your dad, I think, was at every single game this year. If it wasn't every single one, it was certainly a large majority of them. How has your relationship with him kind of changed or grown through Carolina Athletics, something that you both obviously have a piece of?
Yeah. He came to almost every game this year, and he's been to so many of my games throughout my career. And even when I was freshman, not playing too much, I would tell him, Dad, I mean, we're playing in Boston College. You don't have to come. We're playing at Syracuse. You don't have to come. I might not even play. And, I mean, he would still make the drive, make the flight. I mean, he's not a huge flyer, but, I mean, it just showed me how much he really wanted me to succeed and really put a lot of faith in myself. And just continued to give me confidence. And my mom was the true trooper, kind of staying home with my brothers if she didn't go. And then she tried to make as many of the home games she could. And I think that just shows how blessed I am to have two parents who truly wanted me to succeed and wanted me to see that they supported me through every step of the way. And I mean, my dad continued to tell me, even as a freshman, just keep showing them your game. Keep showing them your game. Just trying to show coach that I can play at this level and give him confidence. And I think that's what helped me my sophomore year and into my junior year. Just I continue to play my game. And then just in practice, I treated those like my games. And it really helped me get to where I am today.
One thing you said when you were speaking on senior day that I think really had an impact on people, you pointed to where you had sat yeah. as a fan on senior mm-hmm. day. How do you think that frame of reference that you have shaped the way you related to people as a player?
Yeah, it was 2005, and it was an unbelievable game. And I mean, I just could vividly remember Marvin Williams hitting that shot off the backboard. And I mean, I just heard guys speak and guys talk about their time here, and it just really meant a lot to me that, I mean, guys would spend the time to talk about so many memories they had. And I just told my dad that's something that I really value and I really want to do when I grow older. And I mean, it pushed me and it made me want to be better every single day. And I mean, growing up in the state, I mean, this is kind of the dream come true for me, and having both my parents have gone here. And throughout the process of recruiting, I mean, I kind of had in the back of my mind that I wanted to come here, but I mean, I wanted to explore other options, and I liked a lot of other schools. But I mean, when you have that kind of instilled in your mind at a young age, I mean, it's hard to break. And I wanted to play here because I knew the history and I knew the memories that I'd had coming to games and being a part of this great program. And I think that I made the right decision, and it's something that has given me brothers for life and a family for life.
What are the I know you mentioned getting yourself ready for NBA stuff and everything that's coming up next. Kind of what do you anticipate these next couple of weeks being like for you, and what kind of things? Because you've been through this once before with putting your name in last year, but what kind of stuff happens now for people who don't know?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is just continuing to focus on getting better each day, and whether it be in the weight room and on the basketball court. And I'll start workouts for NBA teams hopefully beginning in May, and then hopefully I'll get invited to the NBA Combine, which is the middle of May, I think like the 15th to the 19th. And then I'll kind of continue to train, continue to work out for teams. And then the draft is middle of June, and hopefully I'll get drafted. If not, I'll try to play on a summer league with somebody and kind of see where I go from there. But I think the biggest thing for me is just taking care of my body and being able to give teams the best me I can give. And I think when basketball is done, I think I'll have a great opportunity to either do something in the business world or maybe coach if I would like. But I mean, right now I'm 100% fully focused on trying to play professional basketball, and I think that's something that will drive me and push me. And I mean, many people have doubted me my whole life, and I think that's really helped me get to where I am today, and it'll hopefully get me to where I want to be.
You mentioned the barnstorming. That's a chance for people to see y'all in a little different light.
Yeah.
I saw a video. It might have been from Starmount, but I'm not sure. And it appeared to be some sort of dance contest, and it looked like you were doing the worm. What exactly?
I wish people could see Luke's face right now. It's like, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
What exactly was going on there? And if not basketball, could dancing be an avenue that you pursue?
I don't think that was me.
I think it was.
I don't think so. I think you got somebody else.
I don't think so.
Good job, Adam.
I'm going to pull it up.
No, but it was a good time. They asked us to do a little dance. I'm not a great dancer, but it was just a fun time. I just tried to give the fans a little something. And, I mean, got a lot of laughs, maybe not for the aspect of good dancing, but maybe just for the embarrassment. But I mean, I understand where I am with different aspects of my life, and dancing's definitely not one of them.
You're okay. You're comfortable in your own skin. Hey, that's yes, where sir. You want to be. What are those events like? I would have to think they're at least a little bit fun to
great.
Go out there
yeah,
and play.
Yeah, they're great. I really enjoy interacting with the fans, and I mean, so many little kids have come up to me and said that I'm their favorite player, and that just means the world to me, just having somebody who really resembles kind of myself when I was younger, and just knowing that I had favorite players growing up as well, and to have myself as so many people's favorite players is very special, and it kind of just makes me feel like I've done some things the right way and helped little kids see how hard work can get them to where they want to get to. And I think that's a testament to just how I've had people around me that have really pushed me and made me the person and player I am.
Who were your guys when you were growing up? Like, who'd you pretend to be in the driveway?
I was a big Sean May fan, and definitely, I mean, everybody was a Tyler fan, and just because of how effective he was and how he scored the ball, and they're both two guys that played in the post. And but I mean, growing up, I think my biggest, the player I liked the most was probably Ty Lawson. I mean, he was somebody who just affected the game in so many ways, and he was somebody that I truly loved to watch. And I knew I could never be him because he was definitely a lot faster than I was, and a lot more agile in different areas. But I mean, he was a great player, and he really played the game of basketball the right way, which I liked.
If it, my son, anytime he's out there in the driveway shooting, if he does a, he'll do a back to the basket, then step back and fall away, and he says that's his Luke May shot. So just know that. That's his shot. You mentioned this year. What allowed this team this past season? I know, again, it ended sooner than anybody wanted, but what allowed this team to get to the point that it did? A number one seed, ACC regular season, co-champs. Just what was the growth like with this team to get to that point?
Yeah, we really bought in after, I mean, Michigan was a tough loss. Louisville was a really tough loss at home. And I mean, I've never lost that bad at home in my whole career. And we really just buy in. I thought it was great to see guys like Kobe and Seventh and B-Rob kind of start to accept their roles and really play at a high level. And I mean, Nas gave us great minutes off the bench, and Garrison really played a lot better towards the end of the year. And I mean, I thought we all started to come together, and Cam Kinney and I really continue to put the pressure on with specific things with leadership, and tried to focus on putting pressure on the defense in game. And we did a good job of guarding towards the end of the year. And I mean, we tried to outscore some people, but I mean, overall, I thought we really felt like that coaches, what coach continued to preach was starting to come to fruition. And we didn't play too well the last game of our season, but reflecting on the year, I mean, we beat Duke twice and we had a great year. We almost beat them a third time, but I mean, shot didn't go our way. But I mean, overall, it was a great year for us, and I'm excited to see how these young guys progress moving forward.
How do you kind of find that balance of this was a really good year and a fun year and great wins, but just because of the nature of what that tournament is, mm-hmm. and when you have a team make 17 three-pointers in a game and just you have that one bad game, how do you find that balance of, yeah, that was a really fun year, even though it didn't end the way that you wanted it to end?
Yeah, I mean, obviously after the game, you're not going to feel that way, and even a couple of days after. But like you said, that was a big reason I needed to take that week and a half, just needed to reflect on the year, reflect on my career, reflect on how I affected so many teammates and how they affected me and the person that I've become because of them and what coaches continue to teach me. And I've just been very grateful to have 4 years where we've been so successful and three number one seeds, number two seed, two Final Fours, a championship. And I mean, I've been through some really good teams and some really great years. And looking back, it's great to look at. But like you said, this, the way it ends is something that will always be in your mind. And I mean, it didn't end how we wanted it. But I mean, I think I've reflected enough to see how impactful I have been and our teams have been through these past 4 years.
If we had sat down young Luke in 2015 and said, young Luke, here's everything that's going to happen to you in the next 4 years on and off the court, and we had told you everything that you've experienced these last 4 years, what would have surprised you the most?
I'd probably say hitting the shot against Kentucky would definitely have surprised me the most. I mean, as a sophomore, I knew that we would have Kennedy and Isaiah back, and that would, with the last moments ticking down against a really good team in the Elite Eight, I mean, that would be something that would have probably surprised me. But, I mean, these past years, I knew I could play this level, and I knew I could succeed. And I mean, I feel like that's something that I've really showed people and proven myself. But definitely that run we had was special, and it was almost destiny to see how we continued to battle adversity and play through some of the tough times. And I mean, that team will always be remembered as somebody who took a loss and made it into a win.
Last thing, at least, we've talked a lot about reflecting and kind of looking back. What do you take away? What's your, in a year from now when you're out playing in the NBA or whatever, what do you think you're going to take away from your time at Carolina? What do you think is this time here in Chapel Hill is going to bring up for you?
I think the biggest thing is knowing that every time I come back here, I will be accepted as somebody who gave the community and gave the basketball program 4 great years. And I'll always be somebody who treats people as well as I can, because I know that that's how I would like to be treated. And whether I know you or not, it's something that I truly value. And I think knowing how I lived these past 4 years moving forward, I'll know that coming back here, it'll be some of the most special times and special memories that I'll remember because of how I lived and what I did for this community and how I continue to progress through my years and kind of worked from the bottom to the top. And I mean, I've just been very grateful to have so many teammates, so many coaches, so many teachers, classmates really reach out to me and tell me how much I've meant to them. And I mean, I just can't thank them enough for being able to touch me and make me the person I am. And I know I've said that a lot today, but I feel like that's truly something that I truly mean. And I wouldn't be who I am today, being somebody who kind of has grown so much these past 4 years, if I didn't have all the interactions I had, and even some of the interactions that go unnoticed, like at the dining halls and in Loudermilk and kind of with tutors and things like that, have really continued to shape my walk and shape my journey, and I hope is the best is still to come.
That interview brought to you by our title sponsor here on the Carolina Insider. That, of course, is AT&T. More for your thing, that's our thing at AT&T. UNC Office of Communication presents UNC.edu. To see the impact of Tar Heels across the state of North Carolina, learn that massive impact that they're making every single day, and learn more just about what's happening at Carolina and about Chapel Hill, visit UNC.edu. Also, a reminder that there is just one place that if you have a spare $1,704, you can have the summer tea package. 3 nights accommodations at the Carolina Hotel, 4 rounds of golf, breakfast and dinner daily. Where is this magical place? Oh, it's just down the road. It's Pinehurst, and it's waiting for you. UNC Healthcare, MyUNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with MyUNC Chart. Visit myuncchart.org to sign up. Adam, I thought this stat about Luke May was an interesting one. Luke averaged a double-double each of the last 2 seasons at Carolina. He became just the 4th Tar Heel player to average a double-double in back-to-back years, and the first to do it since 1976, when Mitch Kupchak had done it in 75 and then in 76. So yet another impressive list that Luke May's on. It really is crazy when you think about and see some of the company statistically that Luke May is keeping with some of his performances. Pretty crazy.
Think of the players who didn't do that.
Yeah. No.
Antoine
Hansbro.
Jameson, no. Tyler Hansbro. No. Sean May. No.
Yeah.
Luke May. Yes.
Eric Montross. No, no, no. No. So, really impressive stuff from Luke. And 750 rebounds from Luke May over the last 2 years. That's a lot of rebounds over the last 2 seasons for Luke May.
You said it during the banquet. What a great Carolina story that I truly don't – I just don't think we're going to see that again. I don't see how we could. We never have until this point, until Luke May, and I don't expect we will going forward.
And you heard it during that interview. Luke May talked about it a little bit in his senior speech, both in the Smith Center and then at the banquet as well on Wednesday night. Just, I mean, he's a kid who loved Carolina basketball. And to have that background, and, of course, his dad played at Carolina, his mom was at Carolina, and then to come in and be as successful as he was, pretty cool.
I'm fascinated to see what he will do after basketball. He will be in charge of something.
All three of those guys, like when they were up there speaking on Wednesday night, and I think you probably got a little feel for it too, in the Smith Center when they gave their senior speeches, just impressive guys. You get that feeling that they're going to be successful running a company or whatever it is they choose to do, that they are going to be successful.
Coach Williams referenced on Wednesday night how much Cam Johnson's academic department thinks of him, exercise and sports science, where he's in the graduate program. And Coach Williams talked about, you know, it was a struggle to get him to be part of that, just to go through all those mechanics, but how much it had been worth it because of how well he had done and how highly they thought of him. And just one little window into the person who Luke May is. So when we finished doing that interview, we sat around for a couple minutes and just talked about the random things you talk about when you're just shooting the breeze just a little bit. Nothing meaningful, especially nothing meaningful to Luke May. Flash forward to the banquet Wednesday night. He sees my wife at the banquet and immediately asked her about something that we had talked about with him during the interview a few days prior that he had absolutely no reason to have paid any attention to, and that was the first thing he thought of when he saw her. Normal people do not do that, but Luke May does.
Oh, Luke May. Anything else just basketball-wise? I mean, I think you said it earlier. We said it on the previous podcast. It's just a new year next year. It reminds me of the 2013 season, the 2006 season, you know, where the 2010 season, and I don't mean the success on the court necessarily. I mean, just you are – it is now a new mix of guys, and it's just going to be totally different, which isn't bad, and that happens in college athletics, but it will just be a different feel.
I feel like there's a general, I guess, sadness in Carolina basketball fan world that, I don't think the Tar Heels are going to be as good next year. Well, they might not be. Odds are probably not. Most teams aren't this good for this extended amount of time. But at the same time, you have to have that first year on the new page to get to a year like what we just had.
Right.
That's part of the whole experience. So as we sit here right now, I'm not sure that we have a clue who's going to be on the team next year. But whoever it is, even though we don't know them as well right now, we're going to feel about those guys the exact same way we feel about these. You just got to give it a little time and you got to get to know them.
Adam, do you have anything extra to do before we get to a little dual story time? Not dual as in two different people telling a story time, nor a fight of the story.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be exciting.
But it is one storyteller with kind of two small stories in the story.
No, I think we should go right to Senor Goosehunkers.
He's been vacationing down in Mexico.
That's right. He has returned.
He is now a golden goose, shall we say, Adam. So fire him up. Because
El Fuego, Senor Goosehunkers.
Dusty Tompkins, friend of the pod, is our storyteller tonight. Today, whenever you may be listening. And Dusty's stories start like this. Dusty says, over the last couple of weeks, you guys have had some off-the-cuff references to Back to the Future. Possible Roadhouse Challenge? We don't know, Adam.
Yeah.
It's not really our...
We're not in control of that.
Yeah.
We don't make out the lineup.
Yeah.
The players make out the lineup.
Yeah. That's right. Production, whoever produces on the court is going to be on the floor.
Yeah.
So, Dusty Tompkins says, if by chance, Back to the Future, does enter the Roadhouse Challenge. He says he has an accompanying story time about Back to the Future, and he's got a little Tariel story that he can add to it.
Yeah.
He says, when I was a wee lad growing up in Charlotte, my personality revealed itself from an early age. Just as then, I remain a passionate person about the things I love. For example, the Tar Heels.
Yeah.
For quick perspective on what I mean by that, allow me to digress from the core point of his story to share this anecdote. When Carolina won the 1993 National Championship, he was 12 years old. I don't know if you know this, Adam was at that game.
I was at the game.
At Dusty's house, we had converted an old carport, which, by the way, Adam, nobody has carports anymore.
No, they don't. Why not?
My grandmother had a carport. I remember that.
Yeah.
I think people just finally decided, you know what? Let's just go garage. If we're gonna make the effort to make the roof, we may as well put walls.
Yeah, what was the theory in the carport in the first place? Like,
you don't want to fully commit to the garage. I just want the roof.
My Oldsmobile just wants a roof over its head. That's all. It doesn't need the other trappings.
My Pontiac, my Buick.
Yeah.
At our house, we had converted a carport into a full-on playroom for Dusty and his brother and all his neighborhood friends. Aside from the fact that this was the room we watched all the Tar Heel games in, another feature of that playroom was a full-court miniature basketball setup. Mm-hmm. It was a Charlotte Hornets basketball goal on one end and a Tar Heel goal on the other. During that championship game, about the time my buddy Brad and I heard Woody say, technical foul on Michigan. They're out of timeouts.
Michigan out of timeout. And Weber, front court, Carolina thought he traveled with it. Weber, front court, Carolina with foul. He takes the timeout.
Technical
They're out
foul.
Of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul on Michigan. They're out of timeout.
And knowing Carolina was about to win, I turned wide-eyed to my buddy and said, let's cut down the nets. So we grabbed a chair and scissors and cut down the little net on the little miniature basketball goal. Adam, that makes me really happy for some reason. I don't think Dusty just added that in as like a preamble to the story, but that was almost my favorite part of the story.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that's going to reveal indeed what a suave, cool guy I am. In my playroom, we had Nerf-type basketball goals on each end. Not the kind you hung on the door, but, you know, the kind that had, like,
Base?
Yeah. And so I would also watch games up there, and as the games were going on, and then after the games, I'd reenact the games. And on multiple occasions in my playroom, the Tar Heels won the national championship.
Yeah,
and I would take the net off of the basketball goals, and I would put it around my neck. And I'd just walk around the playroom, because clearly I had won most outstanding player. But then you'd have to string it back up, which was kind of a pain.
Yeah.
But it was all worth it, because I knew soon I'd be taking it down again.
They don't tell you about that part. Somebody's got to put that net back up.
Somebody's got to climb the Werner ladder and put the net back up there. But it's okay, because the Tar Heels always won, and I was always the M.O.P.
Rewind, Adam, to 1990. As a 9-year-old, Dusty had a particular passion for the movie in question, Back to the Future.
As you should.
The sequel had just been released, which revived his love for all things Marty McFly, Doc Brown, Biff Tannen, and even Principal Strickland. My aforementioned friend Brad had an older brother, Andy, who would have been a freshman at Carolina at the time. So one weekend in the fall of 90, Andy came home to visit. As he drove into the neighborhood in his familiar Carolina blue Oldsmo Buick. The neighborhood kids swarmed him to say hello, myself included. Can you imagine, do you think Brad's older brother like thought he was super cool?
Oh, yeah.
When he was rolling in and
yes.
All the kids like swarmed his car, do you think
yes.
He's like, hey, okay, these kids.
No, I think he thought he was awesome. Like, Andy, tell us about college. He actually returned home to the land of Charles Dickens. Andy, tell us about college. Do they have gruel there, Andy?
May I have some more, sir?
Might I have some more Nerf goal nets, Andy?
Whew, okay. As I sensed the conversation coming to a close, I was apparently quite perceptive as a 9-year-old. I quietly made my way to the back of the car with my officially licensed Back to the Future Valterra brand skateboard in hand. I gently placed the deck on the ground to avoid drawing attention. I stood on the board and crouched low to the ground to avoid being seen. And then you guessed it, Adam. He grabbed the bumper of Andy's car. Shortly thereafter, Andy sped away from groups of kids he had been talking to, and there Dusty was. He was doing it. Dusty was Marty McFly. He could hear the power of love in his ears, the wind in his hair. A little too much wind, in fact, as Dusty thought, I should probably let go. After letting go, I assumed I would simply slow down and be the coolest kid on the block.
Dusty was not so big on science.
Yeah. Unfortunately, an imperfection in the asphalt stood between me and my legendary status to be. The skateboard popped into the air and took Dusty with it. He landed face first on the pavement. Taken aback, I merely lay still for a moment as I did a systems check. He said no bones sticking out, arms and legs were functional, nothing really hurt too much at all other than some scrapes. He popped up, turned to all the child paramedics, all now running full steam to check on me, smiled big and said, I'm okay. That's when Chris said, wait, do we know Chris? Is he just another? Who's Chris?
It's not Andy. I know that.
a new character appeared named Chris and said, oh, no, you're not, as he pointed to my mouth. I ran my tongue across my teeth to discover the only thing remaining of my front right tooth was a crooked, jagged little edge. It was broken off completely, like Garrison Brooks.
That's right.
I had an emergency root canal and a crown that day. Then in 2015, ironically, because that was Back to the Future 2 future year, Adam, the root in that tooth started growing back, and needless to say, it was less than a comfortable sensation. It turns out another root canal and new crown would be required. Looking back, lessons were learned. Movies aren't real.
I always wanted to do that thing where you pull the skateboard behind the car, because Marty McFly makes it look really easy. That's how he gets places on time.
Yep.
But what I've learned from Dusty is it's not that simple, and I probably shouldn't try it. Did you ever give that a shot?
Adam, I'm going to shock you with something. I've never been on a skateboard in my entire life.
Skate or die.
I choose die. Okay.
I haven't been on a skateboard, but I've been on a longboard.
Cool, bro.
Down at the TNC surf shop, they know what that is.
Hang 10, dude. Adam, anything else before we go?
No.
Okay, I've got big news, Adam.
Okay.
Next week, our last full week of pod.
Ever?
No, not ever.
Oh.
Just for this full seasonal rotation. Of course, we're not going away.
No.
We'll still have pods. We will just slow down the podding.
So it will sound like this.
So you can finally match it up with the action on your TV. We'll talk slower. next week will be our last pod our last week with double pods for a while. Of course, like I said, we're not going anywhere. We'll still have pods. We'll just be a little bit less frequent. We'll see where time takes us. Maybe to hanging on to the back of a car on a skateboard to the year 2015.
Power of love.
Adam, let's let Luke May send us out. What do you say?
As he should.
Luke May and the RZA will get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for
pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for
Little bit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.